This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Coach Jen here from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for July 24th, 2012, episode 451. Horses in the Morning is live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the summer, so today we bring you a highlight show from the Horse Radio Network. Sit back and enjoy episode 205 of the Eventing Radio Show as Samantha, John, and a gang of guests provide a thorough and entertaining look at the American and Canadian teams for the upcoming London Olympics and a fascinating report from the Stuart Horse Trials through the eyes of an amateur competitor. Horses in the Morning will be back live tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, replete with riotous reports about all things equine.
I'm Samantha Clark in sunny Sardinia, Italy.
And I'm John Kyle in London, England. Welcome to the Eventing Radio Show.
Hi, John. How are you this week?
Well, I'm in worse weather than you, but I seem to be in better health. You've gone and got a summer cold in Italy, but you're at least having some time off and relaxing while there's no eventing here in Northern Europe to watch.
Exactly. I think John might have said Duency or team training or combine training, but I misheard him and find myself in sunny Sardinia, which is beautiful. So I'm making the most of a quiet week. And but before I went, I managed to go and visit the Canadians in team training and very, very impressed by what I saw. They are fantastic and they look great, all of them. And we'll have more on that later. And I know that you had an exciting night last night without revealing too much, nothing personal.
No. I went to the Horse and Hound, had their first ever Reader's Evening. It was a great opportunity for people to go in and see their offices, which are just behind the Tate Modern on the south bank of the Thames in central London. And they had Lucinda Green, Graham Fletcher, and Kyra Kirkland talking about the three disciplines coming up in the Olympics, and a lovely question and answer session. And the three panelists really interacted well about what they saw coming up in the Games. It was a really good evening, and a lot of interesting insights coming out. Lucinda, for instance, talked about a horse we've spoken about on the show, Vega, that Sarah Algotsson Ostholt's horse for Sweden. But she also pulled out the Sally Bullenbrand Burra Pennies to be ridden for Italy.
Love that horse. We've had pictures of that on our Facebook page. That's a freak of a jumper, really beautiful little mare.
Yeah.
And quite hot and fizzy too.
Yeah, Lucinda reckoned that, you know, that was her tip potentially for an individual medal if everything went right for them over the course of the week at the Games.
And I'm surprised that an evening was enough. I mean, you could have spent all day talking to those three, couldn't you?
Yeah, that was exactly it. We actually had just over an hour and a couple of questions from the audience at the end, and it was a nice length because, as Pip and I said, we get so blasé about seeing these people all the time and interacting with them. And actually, for people to come in and see where Horse and Hound is produced, first of all, but also so many people just spent time at the end having their pictures taken with the three panelists, you know, to meet Graham, to meet Lucinda, to meet Kyra, who I was you know, sort of good to meet Kyra, because usually when I'm at a dressage show, I'm tied up in a commentary box, so I can't go out and meet the riders, especially, you know, legends of the sport like Kyra. So it was great to have a chat with her about the dressage format at the Games.
Yeah, and of course, Graham Fletcher is one of Horse and Hound's show jumping commentators. Is it commentators or
commentators? Columnist, yeah, but same thing on paper.
Yeah, and Lucinda Green will be doing some commentary for the Australian television at the Olympics, is that right?
That's right. I think she's doing all of the disciplines for Australian telly. She was picking our brains last night about pure dressage in particular. So I don't know whether she's doing the pure show jumping, actually, because she wasn't asking too many questions about that. But pure dressage and obviously the eventing.
And we have some news from the Australian camp that one of their reserves, I believe Bill Levitt's horse, is not right anymore, and so they've drafted in Sam Griffiths and Happy Times, who's gone into team training.
Yeah, an interesting development. I think, you know, with that strong team up and the Down Under reserves as well, that'll probably be the last change we see. And an interesting thing, and something I'd like to look at in the future, is about how various nations go on sort of soundness registers. Some nations seem to drop people like nine pins going into championships, and the others do always just get through with all the horses they started with. It's funny, and I don't know if it's about where they're based or their training regimen as a unit. I think an interesting thing to look at in the future.
Yeah, and we have our interview coming up soon with Eventing Nation, John, and we talked about how interesting it is that this year the US named basically the entire shortlist as their reserves, even though Buck Davidson is still in America. He is technically a reserve and could be called up, although it's doubtful. And speaking of that, also Boyd Martin was named Fox Sports 11th sexiest Olympian, the highest placed equestrian on the list. And why don't we listen to the interview that we did with Eventing Nation, John? He talks about the US team and also about Team Canada. I'm very happy to welcome back John, Eventing Nation John. Welcome back to the Eventing Radio Show. We're very happy to have you. Let's talk a little bit about, we now know the US eventing team, obviously, because time's ticking away. We have about 1 week when you
Absolutely.
Hear this. What do you think?
Well, it's a very exciting time. I'm really, really excited that the Olympics are so close and coming up, and all the riders have to be super excited. And I think that the US has a really good team moving forward. I was a little bit surprised by the team as it came out, but it's a good group of riders, and they're all going to give us a great shot at winning a medal in London.
It was almost the team that you predicted. I mean, I think it was, it would have been hard to leave off Boyd and Philip, but maybe Otis was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah. I think, I was really surprised that Sinead got left off. I mean, I think that everybody was. You know, Sinead really did everything that was asked of her, and she did it in large part very, very well. I mean, you know, I think that she decided not to go to Rolex this spring. And if she had, I think a lot of us, myself included, would have been asking why, you know, and felt like she was running her horse too hard after 2 4-stars last year. And so I thought it was a good decision to avoid Rolex. And she took it very light this spring and did a good job. She rode really well at Jersey. And I think that what all of that did is that was the right horsemanship leading up to the Olympics, but it put a lot of pressure on Barbary and, you know, the selection trials, and she just didn't get that best dressage score that she could have. And so she kind of made it hard on the selectors. And then, of course, there was the issue with, you know, was Tate bleeding after the cross country at Barbary and all of that. But, you know, I think looking at it from a very big picture kind of thing, having not been to all of the lessons and all of that leading up to selection, I think that Sinead really did everything that was asked of her, and she did it really well. And so I was shocked that she got left off the team for sure.
Yeah. So. Do you think, and we'll talk about the rest of the team in a minute, obviously in the reserves, but do you
sure.
think, I think everyone's, the US team has stressed that dressage is going to be important. They've overlooked Colleen for a long time because her dressage hasn't been strong enough, even though Shiraz is a fantastic cross-country course. And obviously Sinead's dressage at Barbary wasn't good. And they've said that dressage is going to be important to beat the Germans, to beat the British, but time is going to be very important at Greenwich. And ultimately, you do need to go clear cross-country, and you do need to be sound on the Sunday morning. Do you think that this might backfire and that worst-case scenario, we're going to shoot ourselves in the foot?
Well, I think that there's two really competing forces at work when you're looking at selection. I mean, I think on one hand, you have the Olympic format, which you have 5 horses and you only need 3 scores. And so when you're talking about horses of this caliber and riders of this caliber, you really feel like, hopefully, certainly from the short list that we had, that you're going to be able to get 3 around the cross country. And so then that pushes you to start looking at dressage and show jumping heavily. And you almost start to overlook cross country just because you kind of put in back your head, well, you know, we've got 2 scores we're going to throw out, so we're going to get around clear. But then on the other side, you have the venue and Greenwich, and, you know, that is just going to be an unbelievably tough challenge of cross country because it's so turny, so hilly. It's going to be a big course. It's going to be a technical course. There's going to be crowds everywhere. I mean, it's going to be unlike anything these horses and riders have ever seen and will ever see again. Like, it's just going to be bananas there. And so you just, you know, I don't know how you really reconcile those two things. If, you know, the format really makes you want to say, yeah, let's just go send some combined test horses. But then the venue makes you say, oh my gosh, we need to be so sure that we're going to get three horses around. And I think time is going to be huge.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the biggest factor in everything. I mean, I think that, so, you know, I really, really, really think that you could make a case for, you know, for focusing a little bit more on cross country than the team did, or that the selectors did, but it's hard because, you know, you have to be competitive, you know, in the dressage and in the show jumping in order to go out and medal. So, it's a little bit risky, but, you know, I think we'll probably get away with it just because we only need three scores. The question is going to be, are we going to be good enough to beat those teams that you mentioned? You know, and I think that it's all, when we look back after the Olympics, I think we're going to say, you know, wow, time was really what determined the competition.
Mm. Well, let's talk about time. Let's talk about the other members of the team. Karen O'Connor, what do you think about her? And
sure.
Mr. Medicott, very strong across country, still looked pretty strong at Barbary.
Absolutely. And I think that time is going to be the biggest question for them. Mr. Medicott is one of the most athletic horses that I've ever seen. He's a very big guy. He's not the kind of horse that I look at and just think that horse is built for Greenwich. You know, it's the kind of horse that you think should go out and just, you know, run around Burley or something like that. Like, he's a big, strong, athletic horse. And so Karen is really going to have to use every bit of her experience to kind of get him around efficiently, and to, again, not lose those seconds in front of, you know, in front of the jumps. I mean, you know, when I worked with Philip, he always coached me up and he was like, you know, you have to save a second before, over, and after the fences. And Mr. Medicott right now is losing seconds in front of the fences. But that being said, I mean, Karen's experience is everything. And, you know, she's somebody that I absolutely want to have on my team. And Mr. Medicott has Olympic medals himself. Karen has Olympic medals. I mean, how do you, you know, I really didn't see a way to leave them off the team after the really good spring that they've had. And just with their credentials and pedigree, you know, I think that it just would have been pretty impossible to leave them off the team.
And Tiana Coudray?
Tiana's awesome. And I think that Tiana is really super, super mature. And I think that she's somebody that people think, oh, she's young and inexperienced. But having gotten to know Tiana a little bit over the past couple of years, like, she's absolutely somebody that I would trust under the pressure. And her horse is just amazing. So, you know, that was really, you know, Tiana made it because of the Olympic format, because the selectors thought to themselves, we can afford to drop, you know, one score if we have to, you know, two if we need to. And so that's just kind of what it is. You know, I mean, I wasn't at all shocked to see them do so well at Barbary. And, you know, they're kind of going to, if they get around the cross country with a good time, they're going to place so well and be a score that counts for the U.S. And if they don't, you know, no harm, no foul. We'll have four other good scores to count, probably. So
I sort of agree with you there too. I think it takes a lot of courage to come over to England and spend a year here when, you know, at the beginning things weren't going well for her and she toughed it out. And I think she's grown up a lot. She's been very brave, and I think she'll do, hopefully do America proud. And Will Coleman on Twizzle, not the fifth member, but the last member that we're talking about.
Yeah. Will, I mean, I'm so pleased for Will. Like, I think that Will has been, probably in my mind, the best rider in the U.S., you know, without a pink coat for the last, you know, 5-6 years, of his performance. Will is kind of, I mean, he's such a terrific rider. He's had such good coaching. He's so naturally talented. He has had a little bit of bad luck with horses kind of coming up to the 4-star level. And also with Twizzle, they've just had some, you know, crazy things that have gone wrong, tumble at Rolex, you know, just what went down over at Burley last year. I mean, just stuff like that where you're like, you know, Will really deserves to have some stuff go his way. And he's just, he's a terrific rider and, you know, he absolutely deserves to get his pink coat. And, you know, I think he'll do well. I mean, I'm a huge fan of this pair. I think that, I think that they'll do really, really well. And I'm probably, most of all, I'm just happy for Will that he's finally kind of getting that team success that I think he's earned. I absolutely thought that they deserved the selection. I mean, that's the hard thing to say, like, well, I thought Sinead should have made the team, that kind of suggests, well, then Tiana, Karen, or Will should have been left off. And I can't say that. You know, that's just that's an impossible thing for me to think about. So, you know, I think that Will absolutely deserves it. I think he'll do great. He's a very solid, you know, Will and Twizzle are very solid together. Like, they're going to put together three good phases. I don't know that they're going to go be fabulous in any one phase. I think they could jump two clear show jumping rounds. But they're going to put together a really, really solid score. And it's something that selectors can kind of say in their head, okay, you know, this is just going to be a good performance. We know it's going to be a good performance. So,
yeah. And it, like you said, as great as those five riders are, there's a great shortlist who've all been named to the as reserves. What is the thinking behind that? And how hard must that be for those riders? They're equal reserves, or yet they're reserves for particular riders. How does that work? And what is the thinking behind that, John? Do you know?
Well, I thought it was a little bit, I didn't expect it to have so many pairs added as alternates. I really see the logic behind, you need to have, you know, five or six, because each pair on the team kind of fulfills a different function. So you need to have the Allison and the Arthur to back up the Tiana and Ringwood Magister. You know, you need to have Sinead to back up Karen and Mr. Medicott. You need to have Boyd's and Phillips horses in case something happens to them. So, you know, I get that. Like, you can't just have one person be the alternate for all of the pairs. But at the same time, it's a big list, and it's got to be really, really, really hard on the alternates. I've always thought that being an alternate is probably the hardest position to be in the whole team picture, because you have to train like you're going to the Olympics. You have to wake up every morning and believe that you're going to the Olympics. And yet you still have to stay positive and supportive of the people that are ahead of you and are supposed to go to the Olympics. And so it's a really hard dynamic. And it's hard to do well. And you know, I'm sure that everybody that hasn't been in that position, it's there now, is learning a lot about that process. And hopefully, you know, that'll carry forward when they do get a chance to ride on the team. But I've always thought that the alternates have it harder than anybody, you know, because you're hoping that you'll get to go to the Olympics, but you're not hoping that anything will happen to your teammates and your friends who are ahead of you going to the Olympics. And you don't know if you're going to the Olympics, but you have to train every day like you are. And so that's just it has to be really, really, really hard to kind of put all that together.
Well, it is hard for them. And also, I don't understand really why they put Buck Davidson on the list when surely they wouldn't bring him over from America now. I mean, that does seem a bit like a waste of time.
I think, while I don't really have any sort of super inside knowledge as to why that was done, I mean, I think that was really kind of in recognition of Buck and Reggie and everything that they've done and how well they've served the team. And they've just been there kind of throughout this entire process. And so, you know, I think that Buck really deserved to kind of come over here and have a shot at Barbary. I was surprised that he didn't get that shot.
Well, then he should have come over here. I don't think it makes him feel much better by just naming him as a reserve. I mean, I think that's meaningless, right. But that's just my personal opinion. But,
yeah.
Well, I just spent a nice afternoon, just morning actually, with the Canadian training camp, which was fantastic, and they look superb, which puts me in mind that next year David O'Connor will be coaching the US team, and things will probably be very different. What do you expect to see happen in the US camp coming forward?
I think that there are going to be some really big changes. I think that it's good that we'll have kind of a break next year. You know, there aren't any sort of major, huge team events or competitions going on, so it'll kind of give David a chance to come in and put his system in place. But I think it's really going to feel very, very different. I mean, David and Mark are very different coaches. And I think that, you know, just kind of going back to the whole coaching selection process and, you know, and how David talked about what he wanted to do with his team. Like, I think it's going to feel very different. Like, David is he has his system that he really believes in, but I think he's also going to be, he said many times that he's very open to the riders working with their own coaches. And he's really done that with the Canadians, you know, Holly working with Buck, and he's really been there. And I think that what he's done a really good job of, and it also comes back to the fact that the Canadian athletes are all sort of fill this role very naturally, but they've created a great environment for a team to prosper. You know, it's very positive. It's very focused, and it's very, you know, everybody's kind of working together as a team when I kind of look at the Canadians. And that's, I think, maybe what is going to feel the most different, you know, 2 or 3 years from now is I hope, and I actually really do believe that David is going to make 100% sure that no matter what, the U.S. team has more of a sense of kind of unity and togetherness and teamwork behind it. And I think that that's, you know, that's going to be a very cool thing. And I think that that's going to be very exciting for the riders that have an opportunity to compete within that.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel sorry for the Canadians because it's fantastic energy there this morning. It's very cohesive. Everything runs like a well-oiled machine. They're all, everyone has a job to do. Everyone watches everyone ride. It's just, it was, I mean, I was very happy there the entire morning. I mean, you had to drag me away. It was super. And the horses look fantastic. The riders look great and all feel great and seem very happy together. It's very relaxed and upbeat and very optimistic. They all seem quietly confident, which they should do. I mean, they look super. It's the first time actually that I've seen Michelle Muller's horse, Amistad, and he's lovely. And all the other horses I have seen before, and they all look super as well.
That is a lovely horse. And that horse is, I think it has flown a little bit under the radar, but it's been one of those horses that people kind of talk about as just a super, super, super nice horse for a while. And, you know, I mean, the Canadians, since before Wegs, have just been kind of firing on all cylinders, and it hasn't really stopped. And it's a credit to the riders. It's a credit to the selectors. It's a credit to David. It's a credit to Graham. It's a credit to the support team of, you know, Dr. Ober and, and Randy. And it's just, you know, they just, it all clicks, you know, and it's, that is what you want from a team. And that's why, you know, they have a chance to go out and be really, really successful. You know, it'll be interesting this year. They're competing with, I think, more expectations. And I think that they're also competing overseas, which, you know, the Wegs just worked out so well that, that it was in Kentucky and, really everything came together. But I think that, that the other thing about that is that now these riders have more experience and the horses have more experience. And so, it's going to be a very cool thing, but, really the Canadians do team eventing. Like you should do team eventing. Like, you know, you kind of look at the decisions that they make and the way that they act and how they are. And you're like, that's how you want international eventing teams to be. And that's, you know, that's a very cool thing.
Yeah, I agree. I entirely agree. Well, I've kept you on far too long, as usual, again, John, but thank you so much. This has been fun. I'm sure we'll speak to you after the event for more analysis of the US team, the Canadian team, and everyone else. And stay well, enjoy your eventing, and we'll speak to you soon.
Samantha, thank you so much. I always appreciate it.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk last night about, and not specifically about this point, but every sort of team they spoke about, I know, are a really good unit.
Yeah.
You know, the Germans, the British, the Australians and the New Zealanders, now that they're sort of in their structure, that they're a good unit. Probably the New Zealanders more than the Australians because they sort of, they trust their process a little bit more. You know, Ireland is not a unit and British show jumping is not a unit in the same strength. And I think, you know, you're going to, it's rare that you're going to see something that isn't a unit, a strong unit standing on a team podium.
And I definitely saw that when I went and saw Canada in team training at Maisie Manor. And we'll have our interviews with Hawley Bennett and Peter Barry when we come back from Bit of Britain. But, you know, everyone has their job within the team. Everyone was, it was so cohesive. They all worked well together. They all supported each other. They, it was just such a great environment, such a great energy, and very impressive. So let's hear from Bit of Britain this week, and then we'll come back and talk to Hawley Bennett.
Hi, Glenn the Geek here, and I am here with Cassie from Bit of Britain with the Eventing Product of the Week. What do we have this week, Cassie?
Well, Glenn, here at Bit of Britain, we're horse owners and enthusiasts just like our customers, which is why we love to talk about all the great products we offer. And today we're going to talk about the Equiping, which allows you to safely tie your horse in any situation. You simply attach the Equiping to a metal ring that's on your stable wall or on your horse trailer, and then you tie your horse's lead rope to the Equiping as you would normally. If your horse panics and pulls back, the EquiPing is designed to snap open when about 175 pounds of pressure has been reached to help the horse avoid injury. You know, personally, I've seen brass fittings bend and snap on leather halters before the leather gave way. This is definitely a great product. And we all know how baling twine can break inconsistently. And so the EquiPing saves you the worry of whether or not it's going to break if the situation were to come up.
And the nice thing with these, I saw them at the ADA show when we were there, is that these, you can reuse them. You just put it back together and hang it back up,
yeah.
And you don't have to replace it every time.
Yep, it's reusable up to about 25 times in most circumstances. And the EquiPing now features a security sleeve that slides over the two interlocking ends to make it more secure so that it only opens in the situations where you're going to want it to open.
And the other cool thing is they're available in a multitude of colors, so you can pick the pretty color that you'd like.
Exactly. You can get them to match your gear. They're in black, blue, pink, green, yellow, red, you name it.
And you can find them at bitofbritain.com. You just go on to Bit of Britain and search for EquiPing at bitofbritain.com. And before we get back to the show, Bit of Britain has a fantasy finals contest for the upcoming competitions in London that you're going to want to hear all about and participate in to win big prizes. Take a listen. Hi, Glenn the Geek here, and I am here with Amy and Cassie from Bit of Britain. They're doing an interesting new contest called the Fantasy Finals Contest for the competitions that are coming up here in London in a couple of weeks. Amy, tell us about it.
Oh, sure. We took the idea of basically a sort of Final Four or fantasy football and sort of tailored it to equestrian competition. So basically what you need to do is pick who you think are going to be the top three placings in each discipline. And you have to pick a wild card as well, just in case we have ties. But if you pick all nine correctly, the prize package is ridiculous, and that is the big challenge, because you have to get all nine. If there's nobody who gets all nine, nobody gets the prize. But
I have to pick the first, second, and third place in eventing, dressage, and jumping.
Yes.
Ah.
Yes. So there are 200 slots between the three sports.
It's like playing the lottery.
Yeah, it very much is, and that's sort of what we got to play up with our contributing products, because they're taking the chance on whether the potential for having a winner is very slim.
So,
but
Cassie, what do we win? What do we win, though? That's what I want to know.
Well, for the Superfecta, it's quite a haul. We're talking about $400 retail product per partner here. Right now we've got items from Ariat, Back on Track, Vitaland Shires, Cavalor Premium Feed and Supplements, Charles Owen, Equifit, Equilibrium and Vespucci, Fitz, Fleece Works, Horsewear Ireland, Carrots, Nunfiner, Point Two, and Coclot and Treadstep. So
wait a minute. Stop right there. Do you mean I get $400 for each of those?
Yes. Yeah. So if you,
I can spend $400 with each of those if I win this thing. I'm going to win, by the way.
So if you, but you only get one entry per address. So you better choose wisely. So
per email address, is that?
Per street address.
Oh, shoot, because I have 100 email addresses.
Yeah, everyone does. That's the reason for street addresses.
Darn, I only have one of those.
Exactly. We will be paying attention that if we have an apartment complex with 300,000 apartment blocks, the first entry from that street address will be the one used, and the others will be deleted.
Now, is this for the individual winners? Because I know they do team and individuals, too.
Yeah, it's just individual.
Okay.
Just individual.
And then for the trifecta, which is for the individual sport, you're looking at prize packages, a total average retail value probably around $1,000 each. And again, it's the same companies participating, but it's broken out a little bit differently, and They've each contributed per company about $200 retail. So it's still a pretty good prize, and lots and of chances on that.
That's if I pick the first, second, and third in each of the disciplines.
In one of the disciplines.
Okay.
So if you enter, the way we have to set it up is that you enter show jumping, you enter dressage, and you enter eventing, and cumulatively, you don't have to. They will all enter you in for the superfecta.
Gotcha.
But
okay.
You can just enter dressage and be entered for dressage. But the trifecta prizes are being given away. So even if someone doesn't pick the top three, we have a point system that's it's explained in our 4-page list of contest rules.
Okay.
But we have a point system to allocate how they finish in each phase. And so it'll narrow it down, and then you know,
yeah, it just helps
to worst,
us choose a winner and make sure we've got everything squared away that way. Yeah.
And worst comes to worst, you know, if we have a tie after all our wheelings and dealings, and you do have to pick a wild card for each sport as well,
tiebreaker. I think there's a good possibility you're going to get a winner for the individual ones because you only got to pick three. And, you know,
right.
We're talking 50 to 70 entrants in each one of those. So, you know, there's a good chance, I think.
Yeah, it becomes exponentially more difficult when you have nine.
Yes, exactly. You know, and I having played the horses a few times, I can testify to that.
Exactly.
So how do I play?
On Monday, the 23rd, the contest entries will open up on our page at bitofbritain.com, and it's called Bit of Britain Fantasy Finals. There will be three sheets. You can print them out and send them in if you want, but we have to have them by the 26th of the week because the first jog is on Friday the 27th.
Do I have to send them in, or can I play it online?
You can play it online. It's all designed to be played online, but you know, for someone who wants to send them in, doesn't want to fill out the information online, you can send it in. But,
this sounds like fun. I love this idea, guys. This is great.
Yeah, it's we're waiting till the 23rd to open it up because we're using the FEI's list of right now it's just the short list. So there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of horses on short lists from around the world, and we're just waiting for it to get narrowed down.
Well, that's terrific. You can find it starting the 23rd on bitofbritain.com, and just look for Fantasy Finals Contest. I assume there'll be a big logo right there.
Yes, there will be.
Terrific. Thank you both, Cassie and Amy, for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks as always to Bit of Britain and great North American supporters of eventing. Let's talk to Holly Bennett and hear about, she talked a little bit about traveling, and of course it's a huge journey and huge undertaking coming from Virginia to England and in the heat to the cool weather. But something that they're used to, they're such troopers, these Canadians, coming from Canada to Florida, from the West Coast to the East Coast, because Holly's now based in California. So something that she said her mare adapts to very well. So, Holly, welcome to the Eventing Radio Show. It's good to have you on, and welcome to England. How was your trip over with Ginny?
Actually, very uneventful. You never know when you're traveling thousands of miles what's going to happen, but all the horses traveled very well and shipped very well, and Dr. Ober and Natalia and Colleen went with the horses to the airport, and then Dr. Ober flew with them, and all of them came off the plane bouncing, ready to go.
And of course, you've been to England for badminton and Burley. I mean, Ginny's been to England a couple of times before, and you've been to Maisie Manor, but Ginny's used to traveling because you're a West Coast girl.
Yeah, you know, a 4 or 5 hour trip is nothing for her, and you know, she, like I said, she travels very, very well and very lucky in that aspect. Like, she'll eat and drink, and she gets off the plane and sleeps, and you know, she's a very, very, very good traveler.
Any special tips that you can tell? What do you do to prepare her, and what do you do when you get the other end? Any special tips that you can do to calm her or relax her or make it easier?
Well, you know, we're lucky because we're sponsored by Omega Alpha and Gastroguard, so anything, you know, for their tummies to help them is very helpful. And you know, as long as they can drink, horse quencher in the bucket helps, and all our horses got fluids before they left just to, you know, start them off in a good place.
And also, you came from Virginia, where you triple digits, and we're here in England, where it's, I mean, the sun is shining today, but it's still pretty cool and windy. Is that a problem, or is that something you're just aware of and you keep an eye on them?
Some horses, it will affect them. Like, we literally came from 100 degrees and humid to this is like a winter day in California. So, like, Ginny had her winter blanket on last night. But she's a trooper. Not too much rattles, this one.
She looks like the type of horse that it's going to suit Glennard. She's quick and nippy and fast. Is that something that you're looking forward to?
I'll let you know Saturday night. I mean, I hope so. You know, like, that's what everyone's saying. You want a quick, little, fast horse, and that's what I'm sitting on. So as long as I do my job, hopefully things will pan out properly.
Is she strong cross-country? Does she pull?
No, she goes in a snaffle. People think she's strong because she's so active with her front end, and she's very flamboyant, but she's just, I mean, so fast, so light on her feet, and that's why, like, the bigger horses, I actually think she's better on, because I can let her gallop. Like, Babington Burley, yeah, I had a problem, but honestly, she couldn't have run any better at those big horses.
And I know that she was one that I think a lot of people saw her and coveted and wished they'd have her in their stables.
I think so. She's fast, by far the fastest horse I've ever sat on, and like at Babington last year when I came out of the water, I had to do the option, and she did the option, literally stopped and turned and was gone. Like, she's pretty quick. She could be a polo pony.
And you have her brother at home, 5 o'clock.
Yes, he just got home. They just left Virginia 4 days ago, and he's finally back in California, and I just got a video of them on their field this morning. So it's pretty exciting. He had a big spring for him, so he's gonna have a little bit of a break, and then the girls are gonna start riding him in a couple weeks, so he'll be ready to go when we get back home.
And what's his plan for the autumn?
He'll do a couple horse trials and then Galway, and then fingers crossed, hopefully I'll have two for Kentucky next year.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a million. It was great catching up with you.
Yeah, good seeing you.
See you in London.
Great, thank you.
Well, it's always fun catching up with the West Coast gals, and then couldn't be more different. One of the most charming men in eventing. John, you are right. Peter Barry was born in Germany, but then said he was working. It was sent around the world and ended up in New Jersey working for a company. Didn't fancy that much, so quit the company and moved himself to Ontario, where he started his own business, and never left. Loved it there, and now is a Canadian rider and finds himself at the Olympics with this lovely horse, his free range horse Eddie, as we talked about last week. And I was very happy to catch up with him and talk to him briefly. So, Peter, welcome to the Eventing Radio Show, and you're here at training camp at Maisie Manor. What does it feel like to be a member of the Canadian team?
Very, very good. It's a great feeling.
I mean, as an amateur rider, always, who's probably used to doing quite a lot of stuff solo and on your own with one horse, is it very different to sort of be part of this culture now?
Actually, I was a little bit worried about it at the beginning, and some people who knew me were worried as well. And I must say, I very much enjoy it. People in this group, everybody pulls together. It's really a common effort. People here used to run their own barn, have their own life, and riding is not necessarily a team sport, even so it takes a lot of people to get the horse ready. And I'm amazed how well everybody gets along. And we flew overnight, we arrived here, the horses came, and then at midnight the luggage and the trunks and everything came, and everybody was here and nobody was grumping. And yeah, everybody helped unloading and just stuff like this. So you see, you know, you have good people who aren't willing to put themselves out and do.
Yeah.
And no, so far it's a great experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll probably be spoilt now. It's an incredibly well-oiled machine, and lots of things are being done for you.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't know quite where to begin with if I had to plan the trip on my own, and the horses, the pickup, transfer to the quarantine. They got hydrated there because, as you know, in Virginia it was very, very hot, and they all arrived in great shape here. And Christiana is here, and right away we took temperatures and keep making sure they're all 100% and they're all good. And you know, they're getting a lot of care, a lot of attention, and as they should. They're great athletes, and they work hard, and they deserve it.
And the horses all look great, and you're getting some pretty intensive training. How is that going so far?
I like that. I learned a lot. David has been very generous with his time, and at his place I got to ride some other horses, and my dressage needs to improve, and we have been working very intensively at it, and both Eddie and I are kind of getting closer to where we should be going. He rides, as you have seen, Eddie in between, and I ride him. So we try all together to go to that common goal.
I spoke a little bit last week about Eddie at Rolex. I was amazed. He's like a big dog. He follows you around. You didn't have him on a lead rope, and you have such a great relationship. Is that not difficult for you to watch someone else ride him? But that must be a big change to come into this and have David ride him and maybe change a little bit what you're doing or up the ante a bit.
If you see somebody bad riding your horse, you really cringe and you want to pull them off. Seeing David ride him, I'm grateful because basically David teaches him what I would like to teach him, but I'm not as good as David. So I feel instead of me taking 15 minutes to get something and working him 15 minutes, David gets it in 5. So I think it's good for Eddie. And then when I get on afterwards, I can feel and Eddie knows what I'm looking for. So in this case, I appreciate it. I'm grateful he's riding it, and I think it will make us better, and it makes it easier for Eddie to understand, because some of the things we're trying to do in the intensity we're doing it are new for him.
Yeah, and I don't want to in any way belittle the fact. I mean, I've said that you're an amateur, and but you've done Rolex. You had a great result there this year, and it wasn't the first time you've done international competitions. But is this the first time that you've travelled abroad to do them? Not discounting Canada and North America. I always forget the Canada.
Yeah.
I tried to come to Beaumont last year without my passport. I always forget that it's a separate country. But anyway,
Yeah, we set our international travels to the US. No, it's the first time. I here and there I came to Europe to try horses, but I never went with my own horse over. And again, it's great being in this group. As you pointed out, a lot is organized and done for you, and it's a great experience. I'm so grateful I have that opportunity, and I would like to try very hard to do well at the Olympics, and that's what it's all about.
And I know Graham said you've got a pretty busy schedule between galloping and dressage, and you've got a little show, a combine training test. Will you have a chance to go to London before the Games begin?
I doubt it. Graham is a little bit in charge of organizing us, but I don't think we have that planned. And our trot up, I believe, is on the day of the opening ceremonies. That means we're riding the following day. And so I don't think I will even make it to the open ceremonies. I figure, I hear you won't come home before 3-4 in the morning, and it starts at 6. So with regret, I think I will skip that, but I would really love to go to the village and have maybe something to eat there and enjoy
The atmosphere.
Atmosphere and just seeing all these different nations together, and it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, we hope you enjoy it, and we hope you do really well, and good luck to you.
Keep your fingers crossed.
We will. Thank you very much, Peter.
Well, great to hear from those two Canadian riders. And what I had forgotten until I started doing my research for the Games was that Peter Barry's Forskill Road and Abbott was originally produced in Ireland by Francis Younghusband. So when I'm doing my family tree of the Olympics, we can draw a line from Peter Barry to Team Ireland Equestrian as well.
Lots of lines are going to be circling and crossing and doubling back. I can't wait to hear all about the family tree next week on our pre-Olympic preview. And we're going to come back after KPP and have our short format with the Canadian team vet, Dr. Christiana Ober.
Well, if you're a regular listener to the show, you know we talk a lot about Kentucky Performance Products, and that's because they are a name you can trust to give you the most value for your supplement money. Kentucky Performance Products offers supplements designed to target specific problems that are made with high-quality ingredients included at effective levels. The company's supplements are intended to complement, not compete, with your dressage horse's current feeding program, guarding against oversupplementation. And each product is backed by sound research and the money-back satisfaction guarantee. And today we'd like to talk to you about Nalox, the original equine antacid. It's recommended by veterinarians and leading horsemen as a way of maintaining a healthy stomach, which reduces the risk of ulcers. Nalox can be given daily to horses exposed to stressful conditions or as needed when shipping, competing, or during stall confinement. You know, you can learn about Nalox and all the products at Kentucky Performance Products at kppusa.com. That's Kentucky Performance Products at kppusa.com.
Dr. Christiana Over, welcome to the Eventing Radio Show. You're the Canadian team vet for many years, and we're here at Maisie Manor in Wiltshire, and you're telling me that it's quite interesting, the FEI, in a departure, is letting you send test samples in to be tested for whatever you like, really.
Yeah, the FEI basically has come up with a policy for what they're calling pre-arrival testing of our horses. Which is a wonderful thing, and it is a departure from the norm, because up to 14 days before we arrive, we can send samples from our horses to be run by the Olympic lab under Olympic standards and make sure that there are no unknown or testable substances. So in theory, giving you the peace of mind that your horses are clean. And this is obviously in an effort to go along with the Clean Sport directive in trying to maintain fair play and clean sport, so it's a good opportunity.
Because they have said this is going to be the toughest Olympics yet, and you know, they don't want anyone to plead that it was an accident, that they didn't know, and there'll be no excuses.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I think these games are going to be under the most amount of scrutiny from horse welfare. They've said for months now that it's going to be the most tested games, the most scrutinized games as far as following the rules. And they're basically giving us the opportunity to make sure that all of our horses are negative and we're not going to have a positive test.
And it's open to all nations, but it's not free.
No, correct. It's open to all nations for any declared team horse. Obviously, the date that you can submit samples on depends on your arrival to the venue. So it's 2 weeks before the arrival date for each discipline. And the FEI lab, obviously, it's a very, very expensive test to run. So the Olympic lab, which is the one in England, is charging around £260 per sample for the full screen. And that's blood and urine run through the lab just as it will be during the Olympic Games, and, you know, collected in the same sterile kits, etc.
And then I've seen you, you're at most of the big events with all the horses. You're at training camp with the Canadian team. You know the horses inside and out. You've traveled with them. They look in great shape. Once you get to the Olympics, hopefully, does your job get a little bit easier? You just stand back and watch?
That's what you hope, for sure. I mean, you hope that you've gotten them there in the best shape possible, and they're healthy and ready to go when they get in there. And then after that, you're just enjoying the moment and watching them all and being ready just in case there is a need to intervene. But yeah, for sure. I mean, the toughest job, I think, is getting them there in the best shape possible, and then hopefully you get to enjoy the experience after that.
Great. Well, thanks very much, and good luck at the Olympics.
Thanks.
Well, thank you to Dr. Christiana Ober and KPP, as usual. And then we're going to go back to stateside now to Stuart Horse Trials, which took place last weekend. We did preview it with the organiser, Heidi Vahew, and we were lucky enough to talk to Megan Bond, who was... It was her life's ambition to compete at Stuart, as she lives very close by. And when she found out that they were going to have a beginner novice section, she brought her horse out of retirement. She chronicled her journey to the event on Horse Nation, and we'll put a link to that on our show notes. And we were lucky enough to catch up with her and find out how it went. Megan, welcome to the Eventing Radio Show, and thank you so much for joining us. And for anyone who doesn't know, you've been chronicling your journey to the Stuart Horse Trials on Horse Nation, and it's something of an unusual story, and you're going to fill us in on the details, but the bare bones of it is you're a working mother with a 21-year-old horse who is aiming for the beginner novice.
Yes. When I heard Stuart was doing the beginner novice, I decided to pull him out of retirement and bring him out there again.
What kind of a horse is he?
He's a thoroughbred that's not the track for, let's see, since he was 3 or 4, but he's still very wary of every trailer and thinks that they might be bringing him back there. So he's never forgotten it.
Aw. And what level did you re-event him before?
I did. Before I had my second child, we were going at novice, and we did several of those, and then I had my second child and sort of retired him after that, because he didn't quite come back well after the second one. So, you know, at that point he was 19, and I said, okay, fine, we're just going to trail ride.
And so how far away are you from Stuart?
Stuart is about 10 minutes from my house and probably about 15 minutes from where I board. So I'm really fortunate to have a 2-star event that close to where I live. So I've always been going and hanging out and watching. And when I was able to do my first one in 2008, I was just, you know, one of my goals of my life was to ride there, and I got to do it then. And then I was really excited to hear that they were doing the beginner novice and to be able to go again, because it's just so well run. They do a really great job, and they take care of all their riders, you know, no matter what level you are. They don't care if you're riding the beginner novice, the novice, or the 2-star. They really take care of you. And it's also fun for me as someone who's never going to go above novice to ride with people and, you know, walk down to the warm up ring next to Doug Payne. So that was really fun.
Yeah. Let's hear a little bit more about your horse and about your children, about your life before we hear about how the weekend went. What's his name? How big is he? What color is he and all that?
He is a chestnut thoroughbred, as I said, off the track. He's about 16-1. We did actually hunters for a very, very long time. Nothing really major. I got him out of college. I started riding him out of college when I moved back home for grad school, and did a little bit of stuff here and there, but pretty much hunters. And I had a friend who fox hunted and would drag me on all of her things that she did around. Not really any fox hunts, really, but more hunter paces and that kind of stuff. And she talked me into a little unrecognized event, and we went, and we had the greatest time, and I was hooked. And I dropped the hunters, ran away, and never looked back. So it's been great. So we did a bunch of those, beginner novice, and moved up to novice. And then, as I said, I had my son and kind of retired him then. He didn't come back. So I've got a 3-year-old now and a 5-year-old. And so balancing work, because I also work full time, and the riding, it's interesting. But, you know, you do what you got to do. I ride after they go to bed. I get up really early. I take an extra long lunch and then work late, and so I can sneak in a ride there. But it's really my therapy and keeps me sane, and so I have to keep doing it.
That is an amazing commitment. Mate, just tell me, I mean, obviously I've never been there. Just what is Stuart like? I mean, what's the cross country like in terms of standard and the site?
It's hilly. It's very, very hilly. It's beautiful. It's only used for this event and then maybe a couple other clinics per year, but it is not open for anything else. So the footing is wonderful. And the jumps are all beautifully made. They work really hard on them. It is hilly and it's challenging. And talking to the organizer, they did have some people could say that, wow, this was really, really tough for the different levels because of the terrain. I know that because I've seen it before. So we've been trotting hills for 2 months now. And actually, one of the things I'm most proud of is how fit he was and how well he cooled out after each of them. I was really happy with that, considering he is 21. And it was very hot. It was in the 90s. So I was really happy about that. It's beautiful. It's a gorgeous course. There's everything that you would want on there, ditches, water, banks, at all level. And it's neat to walk your course to someone who rides beginner novice and look at the ones that are next to you that are, you know, essentially double the size and be like, no, that one's not mine. I'm going with this one over here, the little one. So I have some very funny pictures, actually, of me behind a couple of brushes, you know, with just my head poking out.
And was your horse happy to come back out of retirement?
Once I convinced him that there would be jumping involved, I think so. He wasn't interested in working back in the ring, because truthfully, I had trail ridden for the past year and not done a circle in the ring for the past year until I decided to sign up. So he had to be re-familiarized with the right bend, With the help of my trainer riding him, that did happen. But that was probably the biggest thing, because that's certainly our weakest point. But he, you know, as soon as he saw that first cross country event, he was in it, and he's always looking for more afterwards. So I was happy to see that it was still in him, and he was willing to do it.
And had you been riding in the meantime, or had you retired along with him?
No, I've just been trail riding him, taking a couple lessons on a friend's horse with actually a hunter jumper trainer, doing that once in a while. So I had been riding him about 3 times a week and just going out on the trails and having fun and, you know, blasting up a hill here and there and jumping over whatever's out in the field. But as far as doing formal things, he was really retired from that. So. But we kept up sort of in shape, and we fortunately here, I'm in upstate New York, we had a great winter. So we were able to actually ride a little bit through the winter, which was good, and really kept him in shape for that. And I think that's part of the reason I was able to get him fit enough and have the success there with the fitness that we had.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the weekend. How did it go, Megan?
Well, as I said, dressage is definitely our weakest point. I have not figured out yet, even though we've been together for 16 years, how to quite get his mind back and do the work that we do on the flat that we do at home. We had a lot of success going up to this. So our warm-up was really nice. Our warm-up was really beautiful. And if I could end it at that, then I'd be good. But unfortunately, there was a test involved. And the way it's set up, two of the rings are actually down a real short lane and behind a hedgerow. So we had nice, nice warmth. I was really, really happy. They call you in as the rider before you goes in the ring. So you only have about 4 minutes. And unfortunately, he lost his brain somewhere in there, and I was not able to convince him to come back and go soft and supple and round after that. So the most common word in the test that was written by the scribe there was tense, and I couldn't agree more. So it wasn't pretty. It didn't help that we tripped about one stride before we entered. So, you know, you're heading straight for that judge, and he's straight down, and I'm pulling myself back up as we go in. So, but we got through it. It was ugly, but I was happy with warm up. So I'm gonna think about the warm up.
Yep. Look on the bright
side. And what's the format? Yeah, what's the format at Stuart, Megan? Do you go cross-country next, or is it stadium first?
It's cross-country, and the way they actually do it is they have the lower levels, the beginner novice. We go Thursday, Friday, and then the other levels start Friday, and they go through the weekend. So that was all on Thursday. And then so Thursday afternoon, we had cross-country. So we had a couple hours to try to find some shade and cool off a bit. And then we were off for cross country. And to preface that, I do have to say the last time we did Stuart, as we entered the ring for dressage, the announcement kind of boiled down to run for your trailer, run for your life, there's lightning. Maybe that's not exactly what it was, but that's what I heard going in the ring, and that was followed up with, unless you're in the ring, continue on. So I was just proud at that point I remembered my test. So as we're warming up, you know, we've done our warm up for cross country. I'm in the start box. I'm getting my countdown, and he says, you know, 3, 2, 1, have a nice ride. You hear over the announcement from Brian O'Connor, loose horse heading towards warm up. So I'm thinking to myself, yep, I'm going to get held. So, you know,
the curse is Stuart.
Exactly. Yeah. But I figure the next time something will happen at stadium, and then after that I'm done. It'll all be golden, right? So, because I just with the fun announcements, cross country with the fun, and then stadium. So we got over the first, which is right by this beautiful pond, and there's beautiful flowers, and it's lovely, and I'm heading up a hill to a white roll top, and I get waved down to hold. So, okay, I'm being held. That's fine. I'm looking around, keeping an eye out for the loose pony, and I see Doug Payne on his beautiful 18-hand horse going right along the lane by the pond and looking around, still looking for the horse. And there he comes over the hill. He's heading right for Doug. He picks up another horse along the way, which somebody was just out for a walk, probably had done their dressage earlier. So now Doug's got two heading for him. So I'm yelling, watch out, here he comes. So now there's three of them heading towards the warm-up right next to the pond. We've got Doug partially in control. Somebody else, I don't think they were in control in this loose pony. And then, unfortunately, the loose pony decided to go for a swim. And in the pond it went. It goes pretty deep pretty quick, so it went pretty much under. And was able to get out, thank goodness. But they were able to catch it because it was essentially in shock of, like, what just happened to me? So we've got everybody now under control and everything's good. Everybody takes a deep breath and you hear loose horse on its way to warm up.
What? Another one?
So, another one. So at this point, I'm looking at the jump judge, and she actually waved me over, and they said they were calling the ambulance strictly as a precaution for the first rider, so it's going to be a while. So I went and found some shade and found out that everybody was okay, and they caught the second one and everything. So that was entertaining. And, you know, if it's going to happen after the first fence is probably the best place, because we weren't in our rhythm. We weren't, you know, going full force. And then having to stop in this heat and then go again. So, you know, if I'm going to get held, I'm going to vote for after fence one every single time.
Yeah. So. You mentioned shade and heat there a couple of times, Megan. I mean, what sort of temperatures were we talking last weekend at Stuart?
It was in at least 85 and rather humid. So, yeah, Friday was probably, I think they said, I rode at noon and they said about 90. So it was a rather warm weekend. For stadium on Sunday, there was a little bit of rain early on, and that did cool it off, and the footing really absorbed water well, so it didn't impact the footing at all. So that was nice. It did make it quite humid, but it wasn't quite as hot for the upper levels on Sunday for the stadium.
Okay, so back to cross country. You got restarted?
I got restarted. It was probably about 15 minutes, got restarted, and it was actually nice because there was the one fence that I'd been heading towards, and then there was kind of a little gallop, and then kind of onto the next group of fences. So it was kind of good because we went over that one, and then we were able to kind of get back in our rhythm and, you know, talk myself up, and off we went, and everything went great. It was really a great ride. I personally thought it was a great course. You know, it had everything technical that a beginner novice would, you know, at least I think, want to see. It had a bank, it had water, and it had a ditch. I thought it rode great. My scariest question that I was worried about was the second to last, which was right at the top of the hill. So there was a nice drop afterwards. And the way my guy goes, he builds. He builds, he builds, he builds. He looks for what he wants, and he locks on and he builds. So I figured at that time we're going to be a freight train or we're going to be pretty tired because of the heat. So, and I was able to slow him up enough up the hill, so it was good, and we didn't, you know, totally scare me going down. So, but he didn't look at his thing. He was awesome. So he was great and cooled off much better than I did. So I was just so happy with his fitness, because that's really what I was worried about with his age,
yeah.
You know, and knowing
yeah.
about the heat, and knowing about the hills. So I was really, really happy with that.
Congratulations.
So. Yeah, it was fun.
And then you did stadium and on then, Friday.
Yep, stadium was Friday. Walked the course. It was really a good course, very fair. Their stadium is on a hill, so you do have yet another hill. There's not a lot of flat ground. I know there's a bunch of videos up now of everything, and if you watch any of them, there's not a lot of flat ground in any of them. So not to be surprised, there was a hill and stadium as well that it's kind of built up on. And my biggest issue is, for some reason, I don't ride until halfway through the course. I kind of just sit there, and then I'm like, you know, maybe I should be riding. So my goal was to ride the whole thing. So, and at that point, I've already pulled several rails, so it's like, you know, maybe I should be riding. So the goal was to ride the whole course, and I did, and I was really happy about that. So it was good. It was all good.
Good. And what are your plans now? Will you go back? Will you send him back into retirement, or do you have other events in your line of vision? What do you plan to do with him?
Well, there is another one at the end of August. Genesee Valley Riding and Driving Club has their second one. We've done that a bunch of times, so I know it quite well, and I'm really, really tempted. In part because I know I can do better in dressage.
Megan,
I don't know, since you've been to work, I mean, obviously you'll have checked the horse over this morning. I mean, at 21, after a week on weekend on the hard grind in the heat, I hope he's good to go this morning.
Yeah. He looks great. He was, you know, he had a nice afternoon all wrapped in his stall afterwards. And then he's, they've been going out at night. And so he was out that night and looked great in the morning. And he's doing good. I promised him I wouldn't ride him for a good couple of days and just to give him carrots and pets. And that's what I'm doing. So he recovered really well. And that was really what I'm most happy about, is how well he recovered, because it was hot and it was hilly. So.
And do your kids come and watch?
No, that would require my husband to show the least bit of interest. No, he didn't even ask me how I did the second day. You know, there was nothing. It was like, hey, can you help me feed him? You know, so I did drag my daughter on Sunday with me to come and watch, because that's when the upper levels were doing all their stadium, and she was gracious enough to play along. She was bribed with a stuffed animal that I bought from the vendors, but she had fun. She is actually doing her first horse camp in a couple weeks. So it all begins,
Megan. Trust me.
I know. But I will admit this, that it's more of a hunter camp, more than less a pony club. And that's my growing up in that environment. I want her to be able to count strides and know that from the beginning. So I will admit that she's going to be doing hunters first. And then she can choose whatever she wants once she's got those fundamentals down and sits up straight and looks.
We'll
see what happens.
We really appreciate you sharing your story with us and with Horse Nation. And we hope that if you do the Genesee Valley one, that you'll come back and tell us all about that. It's been really fun hearing all about it.
Yeah. I would love to. Yep. And hopefully we'll get some pictures up there on Horse Nation. And I did get to talk to Doug Payne and meet Running Order, which was like the highlight of my life. So we'll see if we can get those pictures up there too.
Super. Well, thank you so much, Megan, and best of luck preparing for Genesee Valley.
Great. Thank you very much.
Hi, Glenn here, founder of the Horse Radio Network, and I'm filling in for Samantha today because of all the weather over there in England. She was having a heck of a time getting this interview done, so I said, well, I would fill in for her and do it. I did host this show, the Eventing Radio Show, for the first 40 episodes or so, and then they kicked me out. So, but I have Kat here with me from Draper Therapies. How you doing, Kat?
Well, thanks. I'm good. How are you, Glenn?
We'd like to welcome Draper as a new advertiser to the Eventing Radio Show. And Kat was my savior back at the World Equestrian Games. We did the World Equestrian Games radio show, too. I was there all 16 days, and it was a ton of walking. And one day I met Kat about 3 days in, and my feet were killing me. And I said, Kat, my feet are killing me. And she said, I have a solution for that. And not only does she have solutions for my feet, she has solutions for you and your horses, too. So tell us about Draper Therapies.
Draper Therapies makes products for horses, dogs, and humans, and they're all therapeutic. So they take this special fiber called salient, and we implement it into the fabric, and it's all clinically proven. And what it does is it helps address edema, swellness, stiffness, balancing body temperature, and helping with any pain that you might have. The beauty of it, this stuff is all clinically proven. You can head on to our website at drapertherapies.com and check out all the clinical studies, because a lot of that really helps beef up the science behind it and really show you that this stuff is for real. We have a whole line of products for horses, dogs, and humans, as I did say, and it's everything from socks for you to T-shirts, and then we have blankets, wraps, saddle pads for your horse, and then dog beds, mats, and coats for your four-legged friend.
And we had the opportunity over on the Stable Scoop radio show to interview the people who invented this particular fabric. And it was very fascinating. This has become big time in the athletic world other than horses.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what's really exciting is salient. We're just in the equestrian market, but we do cater to the human and canine side, just because everybody who owns a horse pretty much has a dog. And then you want to try this stuff out for yourself before you put it on your horse. And Salient is going out there, and they're getting other partners for Salient products. And there's companies like Reebok, Saucony, Adidas. I think they just picked up Puma this past year, that all have a Salient textile fabric in their products, which is really fascinating and adds a huge amount of credibility to our product line.
It is really neat, and it really does work. I know that for sure. I know that personally as well as many, many people who have the products for their horses. If there was one product that you would recommend people take a look at first if they're looking to try out Draper, what would you, is there one that would really fit the eventing world that you'd have them try out first?
Well, one of the products that I really love, you know, obviously we love introducing people, you know, on the smaller scale with the socks, because that's always something that people can really find benefit in, especially if you're out going to be walking a course walk. We always recommend, if you're like on the fence about trying Draper products, we tell you buy a pair of socks and put them on, or put one sock on one foot, because it's going to do a side-by-side comparison. You're going to see the difference immediately, because course walks are pretty strenuous at any level that you're going to be doing them at. If you want something for your horse that's more targeted towards the eventing world, we have these amazing products called our Perfect Polos. And what they are is they're our therapeutic polo, and they're sewn to a Saratoga bandage. And it's one bandage together, and you throw that on your horse for exercising, working out, or if you're going to school cross country or something like that. It offers the therapy value, but it also adds a tremendous amount of support and protection to the leg.
And I hear, Kat, that Draper is going to London, where Samantha and John are at this very moment.
Yeah, it's really exciting. This year we got this amazing opportunity to be able to sponsor Blenheim Palace International Horse Trials, and it's going to be our first kind of overseas adventure. And we've partnered up with the event, and they've been so helpful, all the organizers, at really getting us out there and getting our brand, you know, to the forefront of the event. And what we're doing is something very special, in that we're doing the Best Foot Forward scavenger hunt. And we're going to have these awesome scorecards. We're teaming up with Horse and Rider Magazine as well as Pony Magazine. And they're going to have scorecards available on their website and also in their booth at the World of Horse Pavilion at Blenheim. And these scorecards you take to every single one of the jumps that will be on the cross-country course. And on the naming fences, or the naming signs, they're going to have these little Draper Therapies logos, and there's going to be a letter underneath the logo. And as you go around the course, you collect these letters, and the letters are going to add up to a special quote. And that quote then you turn into us at the Horse and Rider and Pony Magazine booth. And you're entered. The first 250 people per day get a free pair of Draper socks, so you can relieve your feet after that that walk. And then everybody who completes a scorecard, even if you don't get a pair of socks, is actually going to be entered in for $1,500 worth of product and no shipping, which is pretty amazing.
Wow, that's terrific. And that's coming up in September in England?
Yes, it's the beginning of September. It's at the tail end of the Paralympics, and it's going to be a few weeks after the actual Olympics. But it's going to be a pretty exciting time for everybody.
Terrific. Well, you can learn more about Draper products, and I'm sure they'll have a link to this competition in England at drapertherapies.com. That's drapertherapies.com, and we'll look forward to talking more about Draper products in the weeks to come.
Samantha, I so enjoyed talking to Megan the other night. Her enthusiasm about bringing her lovely old off-the-track thoroughbred back to beginner novice at her local horse trials was just lovely to hear. And, you know, we've been so focused on the very top level of our sport, the Olympics, and we mustn't forget that it's people out doing beginner, novice, or the very low levels that put the funding into the sport that we can send our Olympic teams onwards. They prop up our sport.
And the enormous commitment it takes. I know, just, you know, getting my two children out of bed in the morning, I sometimes want to give up right there. But, you know, how she said she'll work late, or she'll take an extra lunch break so she can ride then. I'm full of admiration for her, and I'm full of, you know, I can't thank her enough for coming on and telling us about it. I hope, doubly hope, for selfish reasons, that she gets to Genesee Valley so she can come back on and tell us about that too. And that leads me to my Twitter of the week. Was her hero and one of my heroes, Doug Payne at Doug Payne Equestrian. We'll put that link on. I don't think there's any rider that does social media better than Doug does, and he is a true gentleman. I mean, one of the really nice guys, as well as being an extremely talented rider, brings his horses on beautifully. And I have no doubt, Megan wrote a lovely wrap-up of Stuart on Horse Nation, which you can read, and she says that we'll probably see Doug at 2016 in Rio, and I can't agree more. So he's my Twitter of the week, and my horse of the week is the thoroughbred in general, especially the eventing off-the-track thoroughbreds. I think they had a totally thoroughbred horse show recently with over 500 there. Miner's Frolic will be one of many at the Olympics, and every thoroughbred in between, they're absolutely my favorite breed. Can't say enough good things about them. So go the thoroughbred. And that's me for today.
Cool. To wrap up from me this week, my Twitter of the week is at L2012Equestrian, at L for Lima 2012Equestrian. It's an automated service, so there are no tweets on it yet, but it's going to be a ticker tape results service during all the equestrian events, so that's probably well worth following now in advance. I've got a blog of the week rather than a horse of the week. It's Will Connell, who's the equestrian manager for all of the British team disciplines, and he writes a daily blog from the games. He did the same thing during WEG, and it's at equestrianteamgbr.blogspot.co.uk. That'll be on the show notes. The quickest way to find it is probably to follow them on Twitter at teamgbr. And a very quick one, Samantha, I'm going to blindside you because it's not in our notes as we talk to each other between Isley and Britain, but I've just finished reading Jennifer O'Brien, B-R-Y-A-N-T's Olympic Equestrian book about the full history of equestrianism at the Games. It's a really good read. It's quite American-focused, but it draws a really nice balance between suiting the American market for which it was originally written and being of interest to everyone who has an interest in Olympic equestrian. And Jennifer O'Brien is also on Twitter. You can find her there. But I do heartily recommend that book. It's been a cornerstone of my research for announcing at the Games.
Great. And I'm a huge fan of Will Connell's blog. I loved it at WEG. And also, I think he did one in between then. I think he does one from every championship. And I always love him. He brings a great perspective. So really enjoying them. Can't recommend it highly enough. And next week will be our pre-Olympic edition of the Eventing Radio Show. And we're excited to bring you finally our exclusive interview with sole Jamaican equestrian Samantha Albert. And also an interview with Olympic groom Emma Ford, who takes care of the US entry Mystery Whisper, who's something of a mystery horse. I'm excited to find out what he's really like. And also the reserve horse Mighty Nice, both Philip Dutton rides. Plus a review of the NAJYRC with Shannon Quigley, who we've been following via our Facebook page, and much more. Thank you to our guests this week, Eventing Nation John, Peter Barry, Hawley Bennett, Dr. Christiana Ober, and Megan Kaiser-Bond. Please visit our homepage for links to their various websites and social media and everything that we've talked about on the show today. You can subscribe to the Eventing Radio Show via iTunes to make sure you don't miss a single episode. And please do check out our Facebook page because we often put things on there that we don't get a chance to talk about during the week. Just look for the Eventing Radio Show. Yes?
Yeah, sorry, just going to say, like my mum drowning her golf cart in the Kentucky Horse Park at the North American Junior Young Rider Championships.
And I think someone found a picture.
Yeah, we found a picture.
So thank you for adding the picture. You can follow John on Twitter at John Kyle Speaks, and I'm at Samantha L. Clark. And you can also follow Horse Radio at Horse Radio. You can contact both of us by email. I'm at Samantha at horseradionetwork.com or John at horseradionetwork.com. And please do support our sponsors who make the show possible. That's Bit of Britain, Kentucky Performance Products, and Draper Therapies. Thank you very much for listening. Have a safe week, keep in touch, and enjoy your eventing.